Greetings to you, friends. It's me, Duncan. This is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and I am reporting to you from the brand new simulated perfect Earth. It's wonderful over here. I uploaded my consciousness. My body was liquefied, turned into this amazing gelatinous putty, which was then injected into a person in need. For those of you still flopping around out there with your silly little bodies and your dumb appendages and your complete inability to instantaneously transform into a fire-breathing rooster with a giant cock, which I do every morning when I wake up in my palatial estate in New Italy, I feel bad for you. I know a lot of you are attached to your bodies. A lot of you feel like if you lose your body, you don't exist anymore. It's all bullshit. That's just what the meat fascists want you to believe. I'm sorry you fell for it. And I'm sorry that you have yet to experience what it's like to split yourself into 50,000 different people and have a 50,000 person orgy and it's all you. It's okay. It's a little better than Starbucks. I'm just going to leave it there. And I'm not going to be a missionary. I'm not going to try to recruit you to come over to this perfect paradise where there is no war, where there is no fighting, where the news is only good, and even better, the news is just about you. And because you're living in a perfect digital paradise, the news is always good. There's nothing that makes me happier than hearing digital Sean Hannity talk about how incredible I am, not just as a person, but as a father. And I know it's controversial because my family didn't want to come over here, but I can parent just as well through my Android, which I can control from this side of things. The Android is capable of changing diapers, doing bedtime as long as I don't get it wet. It's wonderful. It does shock the kids. We've got a wonderful podcast with you. Today on the DTFH is one of my favorite meat body friends, Ian Fidance. He is an incredibly funny comedian and an all-around great person, and we had a wonderful conversation about how to handle all the insane stuff going on over there in Meatland, which is what we call the land that you meat people still live in. I will be instantiating my body into the meat space universe for some shows that are coming up. And I would love for you to come see me. I'm going to be in Spokane on the 2nd of November to the 4th of November. After that, Salt Lake City, Utah, Wise Guys, and then the Charlotte, NC Comedy Zone, and lots more shows coming up for next year. I hope you will come see me. Also, subscribe to the Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. You're going to get commercial-free episodes of this podcast for my Patreon family. I'm sorry that I have gone off radar for a little bit with these shows and the new baby. It's been really hard keeping the schedule going, but starting next week, we're going to be back with our weekly gathering and meditation. I hope you will join us. It's patreon.com/DTFH. And now, everybody, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, the brilliant comedian, Ian Fidance.
Welcome, everyone, that you are with us. Welcome to you. It's the Duncan Trussell Family.
Ian Fidance, welcome to the DTFH. It is so absolutely wonderful on the road to get to spend some time with you.
Yes, it is. I'm in Minneapolis, you're in Philadelphia, and with the power of Al Gore's internet, we are able to connect.
Well, let's hope this shit works, man, because yours already says 0% uploaded, so this might just end up being a conversation
that we have.
Yeah, this is hotel internet. But
It's 99% uploaded, mine says now.
Oh, it went!
Look at that. You're at the Four Seasons. I'm at a Courtyard Marriott, and I paid for Four Seasons internet just so we could connect. So these motherfuckers better make it work.
I never stay at hotels like this. I feel like I have to say that. It's just I have someone who works at the Four Seasons and hooked me up. So
that's right. You hooked me up.
This is rare for me.
You hooked me up with a massage from the Four Seasons when I was in Austin and I had an injured back.
Dude, it is. This is the greatest hotel. It is insane. And I don't feel right. I'm so used to saying it like, not horrible hotels, but, you know, like normal hotels.
Well, I love a dingy hotel for some reason. It reminds me of my childhood. But to the point of you getting a hookup, there's nothing I love more in life than a hookup or a pal or like all my little shops in my neighborhood I've become like friendly with. So they hook it up when I'm there or I'll bring them coffee. Like I love a quid pro quo, you know?
No, I know you. I mean, I don't feel it's too nice. Like my whole body and consciousness is like deeply confused by what's happening here. Cause like usually this isn't the case.
Yeah.
They got a fucking infinity pool. They got a sauna. I was in the sauna yesterday, like just sweating like a fucking pig, hanging out with the Illuminati. It's amazing, dude. And you pass people here where this is just normal. This is their Courtyard Marriott.
Yeah.
You pass them and they don't, you get the sense they're not like ogling the flowers, you know, where you're like, God, oh, you have flowers in the
lobby. I never want to live a life where I'm not ogling the flowers. And I'll tell you this, you know, you have a sauna at the Four Seasons. I'm at the Courtyard Marriott. If I want a sauna, I just ride the elevator because that thing is overheating and hot. And when I'm in it, I'm sweating. So I've just been in the elevator all day hitting 11, 1, 7, 2.
Yeah. Just sitting there with a towel. No one will even look because it's a Courtyard Marriott.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cock out, towel on.
Cock out, towel on. Do you have a swimming pool at that particular Marriott?
We do, yes. And a gym, 24 hours. Thank you very much.
So you can get that 3 a.m. workout in.
Oh, you got to, dude. I've been doing a thing. So I joined a gym in Brooklyn, and it's been the best thing I've ever done. Sorry, I just had to sneeze. I covered the mic, and I hope you did not hear it. So I joined a gym.
Oh, man, I heard it. We're going to lose sponsors.
Fuck! Oh, I'm sorry, BetterHelp.
It's okay.
I joined a gym in Brooklyn Training Hall. I fucking love it. I go 3 days a week to these classes, and I become friends with, like, the gym class people. But when I'm on the road, I miss my gym class so much, I can't bear to go into a gym for a workout on my own. So I just do push-ups in my hotel room.
You know, I hear you, man. I mean, there is something that is weirdly lonely about a hotel gym and creepy too. Like, I don't like it when I'm in there because usually you're in there by yourself if you go down there. But for me, that's been my experience. But then inevitably someone will walk in and you're just in this echoey little room with weights with a stranger.
Yeah.
Lifting
and there's
weights and
no music. It's just you working out, and then a man in jeans comes in to get a quick workout in to get away from his family, and it's just me and the jeans man working out, and it's just weird because then I can't grunt the way I want to grunt, you know? I have to turn my music off. It's just strange.
And then the eye contact happens, and then you're like, man, those are vivid blue eyes, you know? And then the next thing you know, you're getting banged down.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And then it's just like, you're just, which messes up my show.
Yeah, well,
that,
you know, I've been there a thousand times.
When the jeans man...
Yeah, the jeans man makes eye contact. You give him a soft toss of, do you need a spotter? And then next thing you know, you miss both your shows on a Saturday and you wind up living in Minneapolis for 3 weeks. It's happened to me a million times.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it, man.
Damn hotel gyms.
Are you feeling like, have you been watching the news at all?
I'm trying not to, although in the hotel room last night,
okay,
I did watch CNN for a minute, but yeah, it's not good.
So today, for folks listening, this is Friday the 13th, AKA, I think, what is it? The day of jihad. Mm-hmm. Is it the day? It's the day of jihad.
Yes.
So did any of it get into you? Do you feel a sense of paranoia about today?
No, I'm not really paranoid. I'm not. Are you?
Yeah. I'm like paranoid in the sense of like, I don't know how to explain it other than there's some kind of odd pleasure in the paranoia, just a sort of like, maybe it's nihilism or something where, you know, you're just like, oh, I don't know, maybe everything will burst into flames. But I don't know. I don't think there's any, I saw some rabbi talking about how, like, you know, the best thing you can do is not get scared, not let them get in your fucking head, you know, like don't let it get in your head. And I think that's the move. I just shouldn't be watching the news. I don't know why I do that to myself.
Well, I mean, you know, the sad fact is conflict in the world has been going on for time immemorial. And, you know, we are not psychically supposed to, you know, be aware of all the suffering that's going on. I think it's a testament to how good we all are as humans is that everybody is up in arms and everybody's, you know, talking and, you know, you're not caring enough and you're not doing this and we need to fight because who's on the right side of history. But it's like, we shouldn't be aware of any of this. Like right now, you and I shouldn't even be looking each other's faces in different parts of the country talking right now. Like,
right.
You know, we should all be blissfully unaware and at the same time grateful that we're not involved in these situations, scenarios. But because of technology, you can't help but just be inundated with all this information nonstop. And it's not good for anyone to be completely just smashed in the head with all this information nonstop. You know, like conflict exists and that's a shame. And it's not that I don't have empathy, but it's like, you know, I'm sorry. I'm incredibly fortunate that I can have a nihilist point of view on it in a way of like, man, well, you know, and if anything, it just gives me gratitude. And I try to put that gratitude throughout the world by treating people around me better. But it's like, I don't really have the bandwidth to make this my entire personality until the next tragedy occurs, you know?
Yeah, man. You know, the paradox in it is like the one thing, regardless of like your views on what's right and what's wrong here, one thing everyone has in common is they're upset by war.
Yeah.
Like that's like across the board. Everybody is upset because of violence. Like that's the sad thing. It's like it seems like what everyone agrees on, like violence being horrible. You know, I'll tell you though, like outside of the obvious like horror of it all, what's truly horrific, this happened to me the other night. I'm watching like a live stream on YouTube of the Gaza Strip, which is another, like you're not supposed to be able to like in your bed, watch a city get bombed. So I'm, for whatever dark reason, I'm watching that. And then like there's commercials. So it's like the worst thing you've ever seen. And then that will stop. And it's like jolly music and like, come to Target.
Dude, it's insane. It's insane. It's like insane. They've monetized the war. It's crazy. And that, dude, that happened to me watching the R. Kelly documentary. Just the most unspeakable prison of this, of a situation of like R. Kelly then trapped her in the basement and hit her and peed on her and raped her. And then it would go to commercial and be like, Ashley Furniture. And I'm like, this isn't good. None of this is good.
Yes. No, that's the, to me, you know, there's this like, have you ever heard the term cosmic giggle?
No.
It's like a kind of like hippie term for like, you know, every once in a while the universe winks at you, a little like positive synchronicity happens, something really like silly, but it's a miracle. This is like the opposite of the cosmic giggle. You know what I mean? It's like if everything must have a counterbalance. It's the counterbalance to the cosmic giggle when, an Ozempic commercial comes on, when a city's getting bombed. That is so like, just, I don't know the right word for it. It's chilling, you know. It's, and I think that if you weren't allowed to do commercials on the news, you weren't allowed to do commercials if it's war related, if the segment was war related, you cannot advertise on that segment. You have to ask yourself, would all wars just stop? Like, you know what I mean? Because without like the media fanning the flames, dividing, tribalizing, would suddenly like, it would just stop. Like, because they wouldn't report on the wars anymore. And without reporting on the wars, you can't do propaganda to create the momentum necessary to like do more war. Right? Like, is it because they're
I think war would still exist and conflict would still exist, but I think it would slow down, you know? And I think like, certainly if there was no outlet as a mouthpiece for, you know, someone calling for a global jihad day, or like even someone exploiting some, you know, perceived slight racially or something that gets people up in arms, or like a broadcast of like, look at these, you know, these people are protesting here, so counter protesters show up. Those things I think would happen, but at a snail's pace. And I think people would be a lot better off without the information. But it is funny to imagine that like, without commercials or technology, people are fighting and they're like, you know, war, what is it good for? I think we just got to chill.
Absolutely not that. Uh-huh. You know, like, and that's a great point, man. Like, you know, when, like, I don't think Wolf Blitzer realizes that he has become a mouthpiece for Hamas when he's like, tomorrow is the day of jihad.
Yeah.
No one would have known that.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have known. No one would have known that. Nobody would have heard that and been like, fuck yeah, I knew it. I felt it in the air, baby. I'm going to jihad tomorrow, because it's not getting signal boosted. Yeah. That's the thing. They're signal boosting. They're on one hand, depending on what most, like all mainstream media, depending on like whatever the particular politics of the network is, they're against terrorism. Like, you can't be in on the news and pro-terrorism, but terrorism doesn't work without the signal boosting. Like, so much of terrorism is the threat, you know, versus the thing itself. Like, the thing itself is terrifying, but it's the looming shadowy, it's the day of jihad tomorrow. And right. So yeah, they should, why are you doing that? Don't mention it.
Well, you know, there's a documentary, and I believe it's called Spin, and it's about the 24-hour satellite news cycle when it started happening in the early 90s, when CNN moved from just a news channel to 24-hour news, and it picked up. It's so, I believe, and I could be grossly misinformed here, but from my memory, I believe the documentary talks about how news satellite 24-hour TV, it's just a constant live feed, and they have a switch. It goes, okay, air, but the feed is live and it's being recorded. And so they have recordings of newscasters prior to going live on air going, what the fuck are we doing? There's nothing to report. It's 8 a.m. Nothing has happened in the past 24 hours, but we got to sell ads. We got to bring people fear. Let's sell fucking fear. And then it goes, we're live. And he's like, welcome back to CNN, blah, blah, blah. And it literally shows politicians pre-planning interviews, and they're talking to Bill Clinton, and they're like, wow, well, what if we bring up this, Bill? And he goes, no, I don't want to talk about that. Don't bring that up to me. Let's talk about this. And it's there's an abortion rally, and you know, some Republicans are like, we can't show how many people are supporting pro-choice right now, so don't show the feed of the rally. Go to a couple people outside so it makes it look like there's no one there. Like they're
right.
It shows behind the scenes manipulating what we see, what they choose for us to see and take in as information, just like, you know, Wolf Blitzer could choose to not be the mouthpiece to signal boost these things. It's all a choice by people. I mean, I'm not the first person to say this, but everything is disseminated to us for a reason, and it's to keep us fucking angry, keep us upset. We're in a fucking fishbowl aquarium fighting with each other while a bunch of dudes in fucking suits that piss money are just like, yeah, keep them angry so right, we can fucking, you know, make more money on Raytheon.
Keep them angry.
Yeah.
Keep them angry. It's true, man. And like, also, couldn't you, like, if you wanted to, you could do fake announcements from Hamas to fuck with it, right? like you know what I mean? Like if like all of a sudden the news just agreed, like Hamas just announced that they're down in the tunnels and they are filleting donkeys. We don't know why they made the announcement, but that seems to be what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, like why are we, if we are warping and distorting information, let's distort information in a way that makes like it an embarrassment.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm a nihilistic optimist. My positivity and my cool optimism wears combat boots. I want everyone to fucking be grateful and to fucking tell people they love them. And if you don't, I'm going to grip you up till you do, motherfucker. So I want to disseminate.
Tell them they love them.
Yeah. I want to disseminate that Hamas is going around declaring today is National Balloon Day. Go blow up a balloon and give a nice balloon to someone you love. That's what I would say in the news. Can you believe it? And then today is National Hug Someone Who Believes Something Different Than You Day. Yep. We're having a national give each other hugs because you don't like each other day. And then that'll bring the world together.
I mean, it would be so like, this is one thing to look forward to once quantum computing takes off and we have the processor speed to do perfect simulations of reality. These are tests you can run. Like, let's see what the world looks like after a month of the news distorting information towards the positive instead of the negative. What does our world look like after a month where every news story involves, you know, some like terrifying monster in the world, like having a come to Jesus moment and sending apology letters and Putin, like, you know, videos of him like weeping and like the Ukrainians saying they forgive the Russians. They, what would the world look, what would happen? I think it would be like paradise. I think, you know, the puppet master that behind all of it is monetized fear. You shouldn't make money off of fear. The fact that we can make money off of fear and it's so easy to scare people, that's got to be what's causing the problems. I don't think it's human nature.
Thank you.
you shouldn't make money off of fear. The fact that we can make money off of fear and it's so easy to scare people, that's got to be what's causing the problems. I don't think it's human nature.
No, I mean, I have a childlike wonderment of the world that people are a lot better than we give them credit for. And, you know, I mean, there is clearly evil and there are broken people and broken things, but I think people are a lot like I look at, like, you know, cancel culture, or, you know, even what's going on now where people are like severing ties with relationships they've had their entire life over if they're pro Palestine or pro Israel, this, that, the other. And it's like, I think at its deepest root, it comes from a good place, but disseminating it and getting it out. And the second you go, well, I feel this, and someone goes, well, I feel that, you so desperately want the other person to immediately empathize with your side out of the goodness of your heart that then it turns to anger and conflict and strife. But I think all of it comes from like a place of like, no one should feel hurt. No one should feel upset. Like, right. Don't you understand what's going on? Care, love. But at the end of the day, you know, this is my nihilist side. It's like, life is hell. Life is hard. Be harder. Shut the fuck up. Bad things happen. Who gives a shit? Trudge along and just know that at the end of the day, we all fucking die. So do you want your last fucking breath being an argument with someone you've spent your whole entire life loving because you both think differently? Grow the fuck up. You're acting like a baby. Go be nice to someone and fucking kill yourself if you don't see the fucking forest for the trees. All right? Now
I'm Wolf Blitzer. That was a direct message from Hamas. We don't understand why they are saying that, but it's not in line with their brand. But yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said for like not for like getting real simple when it comes to that stuff, because it does seem to be like the invitation is like is to sort of like buy into a more complex reality than what actually exists. Because if it's complex, then you can within that complexity, you can find an excuse to demonstrate aggression, like, which is what across the board everyone is against. Like, we've all gotten to the point where we all seem to agree that aggression leads to horrible things, so reducing aggression makes a better world. But the problem is that people are being aggressive in their denouncement of aggression, so it produces an infinite spiral of aggression. Like, how can you aggressively tell people? It's like, I was in my kid's karate class and the karate teacher made this wonderful point, which is like, so many parents say this to their kids, be quiet, be quiet. You're being too loud. And it's like, how are you yelling to be quiet? Like, you know, you're yelling, you're loud. You have to be quiet and then ask people to be quiet after you've found some kind of peace inside of yourself. But who knows, man? I'm just so happy that I get to be a comedian in this lifetime and not a fucking politician or some kind of like diplomat or some kind of like general. Oh, well, God, well, what a fucked life.
It's also like I see so many comics like feeling like, well, I have a platform and I must blah, blah. And it goes, hey, fucko. At the end of the day, we're legitimately clowns. We're clowns. It's our job to bring joy. Now, if you can find joy in scolding people, I just don't see the point in trying to tell people how to think. My whole job and what I've accepted as my fate in this world and what I love, truly love to do, is to enhance joy in people's lives. And I want to make people's interactions with me, whether it's the things I put out, what I say and how I act on stage, or just an interaction we have, I want you to leave my sphere happier than you were when you came into it. And that is through laughter, that is through joy. And in scolding or having these like conversations that turn into a fight, it's like you're depriving people of joy. Like, people are seeing us as comics to forget the horrors of the world. They don't want to be talked at. They don't want to be told what to think. And I think that's a gift. And that's a gift I'm very grateful to have, to be able to give people is joy and laughter, you know?
Yeah,
and it's our job to travel to towns to make people forget or to see the horrors of the world and think about them in a different way. And I think as like comics, we get away from that because we feel so self-important and the fucking ego of I have to do that. And it's like, dude, you don't have to do shit but make people laugh. Whatever way you can, just fucking do it. And, you know, find joy in that. Find joy in the little things.
And watch out because, the slippery slope of the Messiah comedian complex is that it can, you can all of a sudden look down and you're the fucking president of Ukraine.
Oh my God.
He used to be a comedian.
Yeah.
You see what happens? Like, see, that's how, that's, he, you know, was a comedian, just wanted to make people laugh, but then he got a little serious and now he's got to be the fucking president of Ukraine. That's how bad it can get if you let, if you let yourself get too swept up in this thing or that. I mean,
yeah,
I don't think comedians should, and I don't think you're saying this. I don't think that, you know, I think the beauty of being a comedian is you, there is no lane. Like we're fools like that. We're professional fools. And one quality of being a fool, and the reason I have compassion and empathy for the comedians that do end up getting vacuumed up into becoming like an unfunny, I don't know what you would call it, a spokesperson for this particular group or that particular group, is because part of being a fool is you would do something like that. Like only a fool would, you know what I mean? That's a characteristic of a fool is you think you know everything. And so you read some tweets and you think suddenly that you are like an expert when it comes to global politics or an expert when it comes to like, you know, mitigating the spread of a disease or something like
Right.
Because you're a fool. Yeah. You don't know. Like anytime I will hear myself ear beating somebody about some shit. And I'll suddenly realize I have no fucking idea what I'm talking about. Like I don't, why am I portraying myself as being some expert in the politics, the Syrian politics or something, you know what I mean? I don't know. I couldn't find, like, I don't know.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I could find Israel on a map, but
I could if somebody... the fucking map had the names of the fucking countries and continents on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Dude.
Yeah, no, dude, the smartest
I had like 5
man,
minutes.
The smartest man in the room says, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know.
No,
and
yeah.
I try to live
don't
my
know.
Life my by, you know, admitting that I don't know, you know, all I know is that I don't know. All I know is that I don't know nothing. Operation Ivy quote. And then a second quote I love is, oh, fuck, what is it? It's by Bruce Lee when he goes, empty your mind, be formless, shapeless like water. Like if you put water into a cup, it becomes a cup. If you put water into a bottle, it becomes a bottle. Be water. You know, like be shapeless and just allow. I try so hard to just allow, you know, and being self-aware enough, like you just said, to go, oh, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. That is so beautiful to say.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know is such a wonderful thing to surrender to that. Okay, here's one of my favorite Zen stories. I don't remember what book I read it in. Some academic, an expert, a scholarly expert on Buddhism, went to meet this Zen master from Japan. Mm-hmm. And so they're sitting together having tea on the floor, like traditional. I don't think it was a tea ceremony, but they're drinking tea. The academic is, you know, going on and on and on about Zen to the Zen master. The Zen master begins to pour tea mm-hmm. into the academic's cup. Mm-hmm. And he keeps pouring and pouring until the tea is spilling out all over mm-hmm. the floor. And like with a big smile, he says to him, "There's no more room for tea in the cup." And you know what I mean? He was like, "You're too full of information to learn any." You know what I mean? There's
that
no,
is
you're
amazing.
Too full.
Yeah,
isn't that cool?
Oh, I yeah. love that.
The cup has to be empty if you want more tea. And yeah, man, that. But have you ever like I think the feeling of not knowing, mm-hmm. and. For a lot of people, me included, it's kind of unsettling, right?
Like, I was like, just it's thinking like an itch. That. I was just thinking when you were saying the fear of not knowing, I go, I think that's why so many people feel the need to pretend they know, because there is a fear in not knowing, a fear of the unknown. And if yeah. you feel that you do know and you try to act like you know, there's a comfort in that and a safety. But the only way to grow is through getting through uncomfortability. And there's uncomfortability in saying, I don't know.
The problem with that kind of safety is it's the most unsafe thing because you don't know, and because you're imagining you do, you're like lazily researching shit
yeah.
to try to get the answer as quickly as possible. Usually that means like a Google search, but then when you're Google searching, it's not like you're reading academic articles. Mm-hmm. It's like you're reading a headline. Mm-hmm. And from that, it scratches the itch. Like, oh, now I know. It's like, yeah. you know, you absolutely have no idea who wrote the article, if that information has changed. Because to do that, to really like look deeply into something, it takes time, man. Yeah. It takes so much time. And so you this creates this like idiot sense of safety of, okay, I figured that thing out. And it's like, no, you haven't figured it out at all.
Yeah.
You're more lost than before you looked into it, because you didn't look into it deeply enough. So now you've stopped looking because you think you've found the answer. It's a real dangerous thing. So it's, you know, getting comfortable with that feeling of just like, yeah, I have no idea. I don't mm-hmm. know. And I know that I'm not going to spend the requisite amount of time to know this, because I don't have that kind of time, because I am playing Baldur's Gate 3 and I'm going to do that instead.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny you mentioned that, man, because I was on the flight yesterday and I watched Ghostbusters, and you know, the opening scene takes place in a yeah. library, and you know, the librarian is going around and it's just the New York Public Library. It's just surrounded by books, the Dewey Decimal System, the card catalog, and all the cards go flying. It's like the amount of work that went into knowing and figuring something out years ago was so labor intensive. And now it's a quick little tappity tap tap of your fingers on Google. And it's like, that's fleeting. But if you're like going and like digging and like searching in a book, and then you see something else and this and that, it's like, that's, I feel like that's like hard knowledge etched upon you. But now this every sort of thing, like you just said, looking something up and seeing a headline is just so surface level that I don't know. I'm such a fan of work and backbreaking work, whether it be to yourself spiritually or emotionally or physically, to get somewhere, that to just be able to yeah. have the world's infinite knowledge in your pocket is so weird to me. It's like so spooky.
It really is, dude. I just read that this thing is now happening, which is so weird. So a while ago, there was this huge controversy about AI art. Mm-hmm. And because the AI art is taking infinite numbers of images that it is like vacuumed off the web, and it's using that to sort of create seemingly new art.
Yes.
Via prompts, and you know, the argument is that's not real art, but also that's copy, that's theft, because it's other people's art that's been Frankenstein together in a way that looks new, but no one gave a shit about that, and so no one regulated AI art, and so now the AI is vacuuming more images off the internet, but a bigger percentage of those images are AI images. So it's now taking like AI art and duplicating the AI art more, right? So it's like it's sort of this recursive copying of itself. Now, my point is that when with Twitter or with social media, what's happening is somebody will say something on social media. That's the laziest way to gather information, is to read what someone else tweets and assume they're an expert. Mm-hmm. But you read what someone else tweets, and then you see it somewhere else, and you start thinking, maybe that is true. And then that begins to inform your opinion about this thing or that. And so then you regurgitate mm-hmm. that in your own words, essentially doing what the AI is doing for art, but with information. It's not your original idea. You might be right. changing a word or two here or there, but you're just sort of spitting up something that you have consumed. And so what ends up happening is like a Human Centipede situation. Remember that movie? Human Centipede?
Yeah.
So you're shitting in, I guess, what is it? You're either, he was sewing people's mouths to their assholes, right?
Which so for me,
someone would,
I'm in, but then the swallowing the shit part, I'm out.
And it depends on the asshole. Come on, let's be honest, man. You don't want to get sewn just in the asshole. Come on.
Could you imagine you get human centipeded up with an asshole that just isn't your type? I mean, of all the luck.
Dude, I mean, you're looking around because you're like thinking like, whose asshole? Please mm-hmm. let it be your mm-hmm. asshole. Please. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Not her asshole. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's happening, you know, we're all just shitting information into each other's mouths and then shitting it into other people's mouths, creating this sort of virulent, increasingly diluted perspective on things, a non-nuanced, that's the problem. That's why I think.
AI with the paintings and the pictures, you could tell that it was AI because the fingers were messed up, right? And so it's like when we are emulating AI with the paintings and the everything, but with the information, like slowly the information is messed up and it just gets warped by the final product. And, you know, in talking about this and bringing all this up, you know who got it right? You know who figured it out? Ted Kaczynski. Who? That guy fucking nailed it. Just being in the woods alone, no technology. It. God damn. God bless him.
Yeah, he was. That is the problem with his essay. You know, is it's like you want to read a manifesto by a serial killer and not agree with certain points.
Yeah.
Maybe, but then you start reading, you're like, oh, he wasn't completely wrong there. I don't think there's any use beating humanity up over technology. I don't think there's anything we could, like, maybe like a tree that's covered with some kind of like invasive vine that is cutting it off from the sun. Mm-hmm. If trees could think, maybe they would feel like a little guilty. Like, I shouldn't let that thing grow around me. Mm. But it's like, you're a fucking tree. You can't really do anything about it. It seems like with technology, there's not much we could have done. Like, yeah. We were destined to have our brains encroached upon by this like super fast data vine that is like choking our ability to like look deeply into things and confusing us in the most incredible way. It's sad because it's hard to sort of see how humanity like regains its ability to grow intellectually, to do the heavy lifting of like looking deeply into things. And I don't see how, I just think it you know, in the East, have you've heard the term Kali Yuga?
No. Explain. What
you've
is
never
this?
Heard that term?
No.
That's the age that we're in. We're in the age of Kali Yuga. And it's the most degenerate age. And so like there've been other ages, and each of these ages has characteristics, but there's an sort of entropic downward spiral with each progressive age. And Kali Yuga is the last age before the apocalypse. And so in the Kali Yuga, there's all these like, yeah, the qualities in the Kali Yuga are, you know, aggression, confusion, and a sort of diminished intelligence and memory. And so technology it seems as though it's this like pinnacle of humanity, when in fact, it's just like a really fancy crutch that we have to use because we've become so dumb. So that technology is, you know, if you start using crutches and you don't need them, eventually you will need them because your muscles will atrophy. And that's sort of what technology is doing to us as a species.
Where it's
causing this. Yeah. It's like, it's so advanced and high tech, but just because the tools we're using are advanced, doesn't mean we're advanced. We're just using advanced tools, and the tool itself is not making us more advanced. It's not, we're working more because of it. We're not working less. You know what I mean? It's not creating the utopia that we thought it would, you know, or, oh, great, now we won't have to work as much, so we'll have more time with our families and our friends. But rather, it's just making it so now you have to work wherever you go.
Yeah.
Because you're carrying your office.
And everyone's favorite pastime is now arguing instead of like getting together with family and watching a simple game like baseball or fucking some sort of thing. Everyone's like, I've got free time. Why don't I go on the internet and argue? Wow. Remember
just
earlier
argue
how I was like,
and criticize.
Remember earlier how I was like, I think humans by nature are good and this and that. You know what? You've convinced me. Humans are fucking parasites. We're the worst. The faster we get off this planet, the better. I started this podcast in a positive light. Right now, fucking bring it on, Kalahuga. Let's fucking go. Bring it to the ground.
Sounds like a wrestler.
Kalahuga.
Kalahuga. He makes you dumb. He doesn't just pile drive you. When he gets off of you, you have 5% less IQ.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's okay. No, you are right. Like the beautiful thing about any of this, you know what C.S. Lewis says, the gates of hell are locked from the inside. You can get out anytime you want. The beautiful thing about any of this stuff is that turn out you could just pick up a fucking book anytime you want. Like you could, in the moment you do that, your brain will recover quickly. Like anytime I return to reading, it's like my vocabulary gets better. I sleep better. I feel better. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the damage is necessarily like long-term damage. I just think it's so addictive that most people, I mean, God, Jesus, Ian, you want to feel fucking disgust for your species, just go on the live streams of the Gaza Strip and look at the comments.
Oh,
look at
God.
These fucking idiots. Like, Oh God is right. Like it'll do two things. One, it will make you a little cynical. Two, it'll make you feel like Albert fucking Einstein. These idiots like doing what? Like idiots. Like indescribable buffoons are posting the dumbest shit as bombs are going off. And I don't just mean like obvious dumb shit like ba-boom, another bomb. But like literally, I saw someone commented, this war is so boring.
No.
Yes.
What? Oh
Yes.
my God.
Dissatisfied because not enough bombs were going off. Like
Good
you have to wait for the
God.
new book.
That is like, oh my God, that is a level of dystopian I could not even imagine in a book that someone could dream up of just being able to tune into war and going, next. What's on the other war
Next
channel? This one's
war.
boring. Holy
No,
fuck.
dude, they are cut. They're saying that. They're like, what's a better feed than this? Is there a feed where there's more bombs going off? Because this one, it's just like, what the fuck is wrong with the cameraman? Why won't he turn the camera towards the bombs?
Because he's probably like hovering over his child to protect them. He can't like turn his neck. Jesus Christ. That is scary.
It really is.
That's
Like
almost
it
beautiful in a
really
way
is.
to be so disconnected with life and reality, to be watching war and go, no, this sucks. What's on the other war channel? Like, God bless them, that stupid moron.
God bless.
Yeah.
No, serious. No, this is why this shit helps me understand. Like, when Jesus is being crucified, one of the last things he says is he's looking out at the people, laughing. It is like slow, agonizing, unjustified execution. One of the last things he says is, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." And the comment it, on one level, it seems like sweet. On another level, it's a fucking that's he's like, well, he's literally throwing shade since he's up on the cross where the sun is. I'm sorry,
Yeah.
but
No, I love it. I love it.
it's I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The other reason he's throw it's like saying like they're idiots, like punishing them is like, oh, they don't know what they're doing. Like they don't know what they're literally they don't know what they're doing.
It's like hitting a puppy that shits on the ground and not the paper. It's like it doesn't know what it's doing. It's just trying to it's so ignorant and dumb. It's almost like,
Yeah.
oh.
That I think that is kind of like the final analysis of Jesus. It's like almost like there was some research happening on top of the teaching, and the final analysis is yeah, sorry, but they have no idea where they are,
That's
who they
amazing.
are,
I
what they
never
are.
thought of it that way. Yeah, Jesus is like, dude, dad, don't even fucking punish these fucks. They're so dumb. They don't even realize. They don't even know. Oh, God, these poor fellas. Meanwhile, he's like asphyxiating slowly.
He's like dying, and it's just like, yeah, they didn't, when they did this, they didn't really put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
They're just sort of, they do whatever pops into their head next, and usually that thing sucks.
Yeah.
So, because if they knew, then they already, how do you forgive? You're right. Like, no one's like, I forgave my puppy yesterday.
Yeah.
I spent some time thinking about it, and finally I realized I'm gonna forgive him shitting on my fucking bed. I man, look, it goes back to what you were saying originally. You gotta find some more simple way of being that isn't informed by billion-dollar propaganda machines, or you're just going to be really annoying all day
Yeah,
long.
and unhappy. It's like, dude, life sucks. Life's hard. Be harder. Call a friend. Ask them about their life. Try to do something nice for someone else. Because at the end of the day, it's like, dude, imagine your like last thought is like, this piece of shit doesn't think the way I think. You know, it's like, is that how you want to go out? Is that how you want to fucking die?
Your last tweet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like an insane way to be to me. And it's like, dude, I don't know. I think about this a lot because I ride a bike in New York City, like a bicycle. And it's like, ostensibly, I could be taken out at any time. Like when I'm going through an intersection, some guy could fucking run a red light, smack me up. Yes. I could die. And it's like every time I get on my bike, I think about that. I don't obsess, but it does cross my mind. And then you know what I do? I put my arms out, no hands on the handlebars. I feel the wind hitting me, passing by. And I go, if I were to die right now, I would be so content with the thumbprint I left on this earth. I don't have any enemies right now. I'm not in an argument. And I'm pretty fucking happy. And if I went out right now, I don't think I'd have one fucking regret. And if in my head I go, if I were to go out right now, I'd be upset that I didn't mend this fence with this person. Well, the first chance I get, I'm calling them to go, hey, I fucked up. Let's fucking work this out. So that anytime I could possibly go out, I go, I did it my way. There's no regret I got right now.
Ian, you are my favorite. I am so lucky to have you as my friend. Thank you for that. I think that is just exactly what I needed to hear today on the day of jihad.
Yes.
That's some real true medicine, my friend. You're doing shows now. This won't probably by the time this comes out. I don't know. When's your next show? How can we signal boost something that isn't a message of destruction? What's coming up for you?
Well, in a way, it is destruction because I level the room when I'm on the mic.
That's right. Yeah, Road Dogs!
Next weekend, October 20th and 21st, I'm at Port Comedy Club in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm excited about that. November 3rd, I'm at Amityville Music Hall in Long Island, New York. And I am excited to say I'm recording my first stand-up special December 3rd, ooh, New York City, The Cutting Room, ianfidance.com for tickets. Two shows. We're going to fucking pack it out, sell it out, and have the fucking time of our lives, baby. I can't wait.
You are so funny, man. I hope y'all will go see him live because
you're
my
the best,
God,
Duncan.
Dude.
I fucking love
you. You are a demolisher. I love you, Ian, and I hope that you get home safe. I hope you have good shows tonight. I hope you don't get entangled with a road lover as you so often do. Mm. I hope you do. If you don't want, I don't know why I said that. Get entangled. I don't give a fuck. Do whatever it is you do out there. Filthy. You are the best. And,
you're the best. I
can't wait to see you in Austin.
Yeah, I'm excited. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll be down there in like 2 or 3 weeks. And you have such an, you know, I talked about leaving my thumbprint on this globe, but you have left such an imprint in my life and in the lives of so many others, man. You're such a beautiful soul, and I'm so glad we get to connect. And my day is always better when you're in it. So thank you, Duncan. I love you.
I love you. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
That was Ian Fidance, everybody. Go see him live. You will not regret it. He is so funny. Thank you to our sponsors, and thank you for supporting our sponsors, which is the best way to support the DTFH. I love you guys, and I will see you next week.